We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
It wasn't a, man, this thing sucks. Look at all this hiddenness. And why would God do this? For me,
Which you could imagine it could.
Absolutely. That's most people's stories. Right. I just think, I remember from a young, young age, we would go to church on Sundays and I would love it so much. I loved the music. I would feel things that I didn't understand were gifts. I just would feel everything. And then my reaction to that would be to ask my mom on Monday morning, can we go to church today? And I just wanted to go to church. And then it just kind of remained, because I think like my Bible study teacher was really solid. The youth pastor at Germantown Baptist was really solid. I just always somehow separated whatever was happening in my dad's version of church and leadership, because these people were legit and helpful. And now, because I work in church, I think if I get charismatic about it, the Lord wanted to be protective of me.
Yeah.
He wanted me to love his church, because one day he would call me to serve it.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. This season, we have a number of incredible guests lined up for you, and we're excited to let you know that the season's episodes will also be available as video. So subscribe on YouTube so you'll never miss an episode. On today's episode, Jay talks with Annabeth Morgan. Annabeth is a worship leader, songwriter, and a staff pastor at the Arvada Vineyard, as well as the interim lead for equipping and leadership at Vineyard Worship. Let's listen in.
All right, Annabeth, thanks for hanging out with me. It seems strange that we've not done one of these.
We've known each other a long time.
Well, I just have been doing so many of these, and it occurred to me when Nicole brought it up. She was like, we should do Annabeth. I was like, surely we've already done that with Annabeth. She's like, no.
Well, it's today.
But isn't that weird?
I mean, I don't know. Are you 500 episodes in now?
Gosh, I don't even know how many we're in. That's another thing we should know. There's so many things I should know. So, it's been roughly 5 years. Every week. So that's 250. And we've had some extras. So we're probably near 300.
You've been working hard.
Well, I haven't done all of them, to be fair.
A lot of them.
I've done a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And okay, so Annabeth Morgan, you live in Denver, Colorado, presently.
I do.
But you are from?
Memphis.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about where you were born and how you grew up. That's where we start.
Okay. I was born on Roosevelt Street in downtown Memphis, Tennessee.
What does that mean? You were born in a house?
I was.
Were you really? See, these things are crazy to me. I feel like I know half the people that I do this with, and I always learn something new. So right away, you were born in a home.
Well, I was like, the fourth baby for my mom. So they come faster. Well, and it's just,
So that wasn't the plan?
No. She had all the others in the hospital.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So she's like, uh-oh, too late.
It's happening.
Wow.
Yep.
Who was there? So you're like, your brothers are just like walking around?
Literally.
This is like a Deep South kind of movie scene.
It is. And then I'm not going to lie to you. It was a 750 square foot home that I grew up in. And Miss Mason was the lady that came over. That
just
helped
like a neighbor.
To catch me.
A neighbor?
Yeah, Miss Mason.
Okay. Uh-huh. So you're born in a home. Did you ever go to the hospital?
Oh, totally. Okay, an ambulance came.
Oh, the ambulance came. Mm-hmm. So we did have medical intervention
at
some point.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Great. It just happened very fast. My mom was like, I don't feel much. And then it was like, oh no, there's a baby.
So you're born in a home, you get checked out and everything.
Yep.
And where are you? You have a bunch of siblings.
I have four brothers.
Yep.
And I'm the fourth.
Yep.
So there's three above and one younger.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So you're born into Memphis, Tennessee, a 750 square foot home. What did your parents do? What put them in Memphis, Tennessee?
My dad worked for Malone and Hyde, which was a distribution food company. When I was born, and they were both born in Memphis. That's not true. My dad was born in Memphis. My mom was born in South Carolina, but quickly went to Memphis at like age three. So they just knew Memphis. My mom did not work at the time.
Okay. So she's at home. He's working in a distribution thing. You have four brothers.
Yes.
What? Well, I'm just, this
it's
is,
just funny. Can I be honest? Because I'm visualizing my life again.
You can see it.
Me giggle as
why?
I'm thinking.
Why? What particularly?
How chaotic it was.
Yeah, okay,
it just
yeah.
makes me immediately laugh.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine that many mm-hmm. humans banging around in that little house.
There were three brothers in one room in a triple bunk bed.
Wow.
So like a top, a middle, and a trundle.
Okay.
And then there was my parents' room. And then me in a little bunk bed with my other brother below me. That was, and we had one bathroom. And it had a pedestal sink, so no like cabinetry, and the toilet, and the shower. And the joke was somebody was always in the shower, brushing their teeth, and may also be using the toilet.
All together, yeah.
All together.
I've seen, so
chaos.
I'm an only child, so there's nothing about this I understand. Other than I see movies or, you know, obviously Danielle, my wife, has four sisters, so five girls. And I've seen people develop a system where they blow a whistle, like things are on a time.
Oh.
So when it's your time to come, nothing like that. It was just everybody everywhere.
It was fend for yourself.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you're growing up.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of kid were you? Were you music girl? Were you like a goth girl? Were you like a hippie girl? Were
oh
you
my
like
gosh. A I was
athlete?
A tomboy.
Okay, so tomboy.
No music. I mean, we would sing in the car for fun, but never. There
it
was
wasn't
no
like
music.
We're a music family. Everybody got your instrument and let's.
No, I think because my mom had a lot of history with music that was bad. My granny was the piano player for the church. My mom was invited to sing with Elvis Presley.
Wow.
Her and her sisters, very much so. She sings like Karen Carpenter.
Wow.
Alto. Beautiful voice. But because of all the bad history, my mom didn't really do music once. My granny said, you cannot go on the road with that man that shakes his hips that way.
Oh.
And then my mom was like, okay. And then she never really did music.
It's devil stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're basically like running around.
Oh, I'm playing sports like crazy.
Swimming in the creek. I'm just trying to pick up some Memphis.
It's in the middle of Memphis, the city,
okay.
Not the country. I did swim in creeks at my in-law or my relative's homes, but not
okay.
in the country.
That's not what you're doing. Okay, so you're mm-hmm. doing sports, hanging out, doing mm-hmm. and church is a big part of life. Or
yes.
Not. No. What does that mean?
Well, it's kind of funny. My dad one day comes home and says, I'm called to the ministry.
Oh.
So he quits his job.
Great.
Out of nowhere.
Okay.
My mom, remember, she stayed home.
Yeah,
so we're already
no
poor.
Money.
So it's more poor.
Wow.
If you can be.
Yeah.
And then my dad started at Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary. It sits in Memphis.
Okay.
And got his MDiv.
So he jumps into training.
Jumps right into seminary.
Huh. And that's Southern Baptist.
It is.
So Southern Baptists don't necessarily require theological education.
Nope, they did. They required, my dad did go to college. He graduated from the University of Tennessee.
Okay.
And I think his degree was in regular education.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, like going to be a teacher.
Yeah.
But never did that.
So now he's going to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Based on some experience.
Some moment with the Lord.
Oh, that's cool.
Not like a charismatic moment, just a.
In
probably,
his mind.
Yeah, in his mind. Packing boxes and food distribution, going, I should go to seminary.
And Southern Baptist Church was Sunday all day.
Oh,
Wednesday.
It was all the time. It was
right.
Sunday because my dad was a deacon.
Oh, okay.
That language.
So prior to even saying, I don't call to be a pastor.
Yeah.
He's like a serious person. Like,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it suits.
Yes.
It's dresses.
Teaching Sunday school, you know, all the things. And it was Sunday mornings. And then, so you would go to Sunday school for an hour or whatever, maybe a little longer. Then you go to church and sit through the service. There wasn't kids church during adult church. It was like all the things. Then everybody in service. Then you would come back for Sunday night church.
Right.
Which was the same thing, but there was no kids stuff. It was just a service.
Okay.
And then you would go Wednesday nights.
And it's Bible, 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 Bible.
Mm-hmm. There was no gifts or Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
It was, I did Bible drill, you know, like the,
sword
drill.
Drills. So, and you would sing hymns?
Yep.
Is there at least an organ or a...
A piano and organ.
Piano and organ.
Then the church I grew up in where he was a deacon before, because once he got into seminary and then got that degree, we didn't go to the church I grew up in. But the church I grew up in was massive.
Hmm.
The president of the Southern Baptist Association was the pastor.
Really? What was his name?
Adrian Rogers.
Oh my gosh, I know Adrian Rogers. Yeah, well, that guy, he can preach.
God bless him. He's in heaven with the Lord.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he can preach. He had a radio show. He wrote like 100 books. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had the Love Worth Finding Network.
Yeah,
that's right. His thing. That's his podcast, his show.
Yeah,
his church was thousands.
I heard him on the radio. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a really nice timbre to his voice. He's a preacher. Like
yes.
Yeah.
And my parents, because my dad was a deacon, they were in that as close to Rich or as close to Adrian Rogers as you could get, right? Mm-hmm. In that kind of.
Which is probably 100 people.
Yeah, right. Because that church was huge. Right. So I grew up, the reason I said that is the choir was like 150 people in robes on a Sunday. It was like a New York production every Sunday.
Yeah.
They had timpani drums. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
A full symphony on the floor.
It's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what you're growing up in.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he gets done with his training, mm-hmm. whatever, now he's called to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. So now you got to go to wherever.
We went to Brookside Baptist Church.
Little church.
Little church.
Still in Memphis.
Yes. Yes, technically in Memphis.
So you don't move?
Nope. Well, we had to move. I can go back just a bit. Okay. I had to move because there was a gang shooting in the neighbor's lawn and my brother's best friend was killed.
Oh,
and my
gosh.
Parents got really, really nervous and said, we got to leave. So that was when I was in second grade. So I'd be 7 or 8 years old when we moved out of this area of Memphis to this little suburb in a home that was probably miraculous that we got into it. It felt like a mansion because it had two stories and it was 1,200 square feet.
Wow.
You know? So.
And that's before the pastoral.
It was. Job. My dad had just, it was during seminary though. Mm. He had started seminary in that other home on Roosevelt Street where I was born.
Yeah.
And then he continued. Seminary was long. I mean, it was a legit master's degree. It took him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
An MDiv is, just the languages alone is a lot of work.
Yeah. Okay. Am I wrong? It's 4 years. Does that seem like that?
At least, mm-hmm. Depending on what your previous.
So because I'm young, I don't know that sort of, I just know the timelines of how old I was when he got his job at Brookside. I was going into sixth grade.
Wow. So that's a big.
It's like 4 years.
So, and I'm sure leaving that church, I mean, that's a big transition at that age.
Do you know how many middle schoolers there are in small churches?
Zero.
Yeah. It was me and this teacher sitting across the table because I was the pastor's kid. And I went from that. I mean.
So he jumps as the lead pastor.
No.
Oh.
The discipleship, like a secondary associate pastor.
Okay.
In the Baptist world.
Probably two or three staff.
Oh, it was him and Brother Bomar, who was the lead pastor.
Brother Bomar.
Yep.
Okay. So now I'm a pastor's kid. Mm-hmm. I'm now in a smaller church. Mm-hmm. No timpanis, no.
Literally a piano and an organ. That's it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And probably not the same quality of singing or experience.
No, Brother Jim, the musician, was not. Bellevue Baptist, I mean, they have, can I tell you this? They still to this day have the singing Christmas tree.
Oh.
That people pay and fly to see at Christmas time because it's famous.
What is it? What is a singing? Maybe
it's a Christmas tree that's
is it like animated? Like it's a Disney
literally
thing?
It's literally like a big play, and you can Christmas tree holds humans, and they stand in the tree, and it lights, and they sing songs, the Hallelujah chorus, and Oh Holy Night. You were the best singer at Bellevue if you got the top position in the tree and got to sing the solo version of Oh Holy Night.
Oh, so wait, it's a tree. It's big enough for more than one person to be in it at the same time.
Oh, it's got like 100 people in it.
Oh, okay.
You're loving this, aren't you?
I'm having a hard time seeing it in my mind.
It's a Christmas tree.
How
that
big?
Basically
is
has
it like
rows.
50 feet high?
At least.
Oh, it's, so human. It's almost like like Hollywood Squares.
It's literally like that, but a big old Christmas tree. And they're just standing by each other. Yes.
So it's like a set.
Yes.
It's like
Okay, so that's one.
Is the building big enough to do this?
25,000 people fit in the sanctuary of the church I grew up in.
Wait, this is back. We're back to Adrian Rogers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Wait, okay.
Sorry. Did I break your brain?
No, I was
you
in
were
the
Brother
small,
Bomar.
Yeah,
oh, no. No, sorry. The reason we got there.
I was like, hold up. How?
Brother Jim is not like this production.
Got it. Okay. So, yeah, my bad.
Sorry.
Okay,
my bad.
No. I got it now. So yeah, you go from.
That.
This like serious to now Brother Jim just screeching it out. Yeah, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's pretty jarring.
And I'm going into middle school.
Right.
Yeah.
And so no friends are coming to church with you.
No. I didn't have, yeah, no.
There's no youth group.
Nope. I have four brothers. So three brothers made up.
Oh, I see.
I think a youth group of eight.
So we get to hang out with my family and a few others and call it youth group. Mm-hmm. Got it. This sounds great.
It didn't last long.
What didn't last long?
This stint.
Meaning being at the church and your dad being pastor. Okay, so what happens? What's the next big nodal change?
Oh, my dad's life. His mental health crisis that he'd always dealt with, but then his life of addiction really spiked, and then he couldn't keep the job.
They fired him. Mm-hmm. Did he? But maybe he quit?
I think maybe he quit, but he knew that they had found out that he was addicted to gambling really bad because men were coming after us for money. And they found his place of employment. So these guys from the casino showed up at this church building, right?
At a casino. So it's not just like I bet on a game.
No. Like he would disappear for days and we would think he was dead. And then it got really bad very quickly. So my dad was only at that church for 3 years because I was going into high school when we transitioned again.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So he ends up resigning / getting fired. Mm-hmm. And your mom is like, I can't do this.
Nope. She stayed in the marriage. What happened was when he started being addicted to gambling, she went into a mode of like, no one can know we have to hide this or we're going to lose all this. But then she also started getting jobs.
Okay.
And she became,
she starts to work.
Yeah. And her career from that moment all the way until she retired was in travel.
Oh.
She worked for St. Jude Children's Hospital and ran their whole travel department. She worked for FedEx and ran their whole travel for their local planes. She worked at Harris Casino despite my dad for 6 months and then left there. I mean, it's a whole thing.
Wait, she worked at the casino so that?
She said she was like so upset that, this is weird, Jay. She said, God really is messed up in not helping my husband overcome this addiction. So I'll just work for the casinos because you get paid five times more. They have a lot of money. So for 6 months, it felt like all of a sudden we had all this money. I remember her being like, we're going to Hawaii.
And she's doing logistics.
She's just doing travel for the employees from Harrah's. Harrah's is in multiple cities.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of companies that have their own travel agencies built into the to the system.
Because you got to go work. You got to go to a meeting there.
Exactly.
Or do the thing. Or,
So anyway, isn't that funny? So she said, I took a job at Harrah's to spite the Lord and my husband. And then she came to and said, Lord, forgive me. And then that's when she started working for St. Jude Children's Hospital.
So do you go over to, do you guys go back to Adrian Rogers Church once you're out of that?
You know what? We did not because my brothers and I were really connected to our high school. It was Germantown High School. And there was a big Germantown Baptist church.
Oh, okay.
And we started going on youth trips with them. And my mom was like, we're going to go wherever the kids are connected.
Go there. Huh. Okay. Yep. And then dad is still somehow at home.
Yep, but never has a job very
just
much.
Just kind of like milling around.
And his addictions, disappearing, coming home, staying home, going back to his addiction, sitting at home.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
And that's probably not the way you described it, that's not a public conversation. Mm-mm. It's just kind of like...
No, it was not a public conversation ever. So like, my mom wouldn't go to like Sunday school and say, I need some help. But then my dad would show up to Sunday school with her and they would smile, you know?
Right.
Like he was fine.
So in all of those transitions, is church like a respite? Is it like a help? Is it a hurt? Is it like a...
You know,
useful thing? Is it kind of like, I don't know. Is it more like, I don't know, it's like brushing my teeth. I guess it's just a thing we do. I mean, what is it? What does it represent or mean?
You know, I don't know why I'm glad what I'm about to say, but it wasn't a, man, this thing sucks. Look at all this hiddenness and why would God do this for me?
Which you could imagine it could.
Absolutely. That's most people's stories. Right. I just think, I remember from a young age, we would go to church on Sundays and I would love it so much. I love the music. I would feel things that I didn't understand were gifts. I just would feel everything. And then my reaction to that would be to ask my mom on Monday morning, can we go to church today? And I just wanted to go to church. And then... it just kind of remained because I think like my Bible study teacher was really solid. The youth pastor at Germantown Baptist was really solid. I just always somehow separated whatever was happening in my dad's version of church and leadership, because these people were legit and helpful. Mm. And now, because I work in church, I think if I get charismatic about it, the Lord wanted to be protective of me.
Yeah.
He wanted me to love his church because one day he would call me to serve it.
Yeah.
But I would not have had context for that because I'm a woman.
Sure. Yeah. You weren't allowed to be a pastor.
Exactly.
Or really even a leader.
Yes. With kids, I could be in the nursery or women.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kids or I could be a special singer.
Right.
But not lead the music.
Because that's not authority. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and I think so, that's my answer to that.
And this might be too much to ask, but I think it'd be interesting moving forward thinking about pastoral ministry.
Yeah.
You with your brothers, with your mom, with your dad, there's no like talking like, what's going on? Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Or you're probably not bringing friends home.
It's not too much. There's sad stuff, but like my brothers were gone all the time and we're drinking all the time. So I had a lot of partying brothers. They're coping.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. And then because I was my mom's only daughter and because of my wiring, I think I became my mom's best friend and we would just leave the house and do fun things, you know, and my mom loved that I would be around. And then I did have friends. I was pretty popular, but I would just always go to them. I never had sleepovers.
Too much chaos.
Yeah. And I was private too. I didn't want people to see that dynamic because my dad was unhinged. There was no hiding the way he behaved.
Right.
You know?
So you were aware even that young, like, this is messed up. It wasn't like, I don't know. It just is what it is.
Yeah. No, I was like, other people's dads don't act like this.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
And so you were intuitive enough and you're knowing you're a high enough feeler that you're like, this feels bad. I'm just going to stay distracted. I'll hang out with my mom. I don't know what my brother's doing. Everybody's just coping.
I think it gets a little worse than that and good. I also was the last sibling to still cry and believe like dad could change at any moment, y'all.
Yeah.
If God's who he says he is.
Right.
This Sunday could be the Sunday where our dad changes in his mind.
Yeah, he says,
and he behaves differently.
Right.
And my family was like, why are you still believing that?
Right. Yep.
And so I think that kept me a little softer, a little longer. I wasn't perfect in that. You do finally go, this isn't changing. And God could do that, but he has a choice. I'm too young to have those thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? But you're intuiting, this is strange. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do about this. I'll just stay close to my mom, create some distance. I don't know what my brothers are doing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you just go through all of high school doing that, playing sports.
Oh, actually, I had a really good plan on, you better be good at everything because it'll be your ticket out, you know? Mm-hmm. So really good at sports, made straight A's, involved in every extracurricular that I could be.
Right.
Just because it was like, your resume needs to be 80,000 pages so that you can get as many scholarships because we had no money.
Right.
I don't know how I knew that. When I was sharing this with somebody, they're like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know.
It's amazing what you know.
It's amazing how you just go, this is my ticket out. I know that hard work's involved. I'm just going to do that.
Totally.
You know?
Okay. So then you get all the way through high school. They're still all together, still whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I got to do something else. What do you do?
I get scholarships to college and play sports and academics. And I get my degree from Mississippi State University.
Why'd you pick Mississippi State?
I didn't want to go to the University of Tennessee.
Got to get out of here.
Got to get out of there. Mm. And honestly, I was in a Bible study with a Young Life leader. And there was a girl in that group named Kim. And we got really close. And she said, do you want to go with me on a college visit? And I said, where are you going? And she said, Mississippi State. And I made fun of her. I said, you're going to go to the Cal College, you know, just so snobby.
Right.
And then I showed up and had probably my first prophetic encounter with the Lord, where it was like, if God were a person and I could hear his voice, he's saying you're supposed to go here. But I didn't tell anybody that because you would be considered crazy.
Right.
And so I didn't tell anybody, but I was obedient enough to know you got to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And then, if I'm honest with you, I knew too, like Vanderbilt was a big option for me.
Great school.
Very expensive.
Very expensive.
So even if you get a scholarship, you're paying some. Well, this school, I had to pay nothing.
And it's far away.
Well, and my brothers, Tennessee's technically in Knoxville, it's further.
Right.
But no brothers there. And then I could escape the, like, they were so overprotective. It wasn't they were mean to me. It was like, well, you're never dating anybody and you're never going to go to a fraternity party. And I didn't want to be wild. I wanted to be social. Right. And so I was like, I can't go to a college where my brothers are.
Right.
They're just going to, I would go visit them and they would like lock me in their dorm room basically. And I'm like, this is not okay. So
when you go to college, mm-hmm. is that a celebrate? Like, man, we're so glad you chose this. Or is like, why are you going away?
It was
both.
Both. My mom was very, very glad because it got worse and worse with my dad. So she was like, well, at least you don't have to be here with this stuff.
Yeah.
Because he was getting a little more violent in his behavior. And then my dad was like, on his good days, I'm so proud of you. And on his bad days, you're betraying your mother, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
So,
but he's probably less of a credible source at this point.
Oh, I don't care what he said.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, so you go to college and you're going to study what?
Medicine,
mm-hmm. okay.
There's a lot of rules. You're going to college and there's three options for people like you.
Wait, where are the rules? Who made the rules?
Dad.
Oh, okay. Got it. Sorry. I'm back.
I was indoctrinated from a young age. If you're smart and make good grades and have good high IQ and all that stuff, you're either a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. And then when I got close to that.
It's like you're from an Indian family.
You don't know anything about that. Aren't you? What is your ethnicity?
Or, well, really, any Southeast Asian family. Say. Truth be told, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Two Southern white parents with these weird rules. Yeah. And to be honest with you, my mom didn't say, like, that's ridiculous. She was like, well, he's not wrong. Those are good careers.
They are. There's a reason why you choose those.
Totally.
Totally. Okay.
And I just, by temperament, this is in my college visit when I had committed to Mississippi State. My dad had me go to the biological science engineering building. Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah.
You know me. And you giggled a little. It's because I could not be less wired to build robotics and things in medicine. Yeah. And all I could think was, I don't think my brain works like a lawyer.
Yeah.
And then I thought, but I'm really good at science and I can help people.
Yeah.
So that was my degree's in three things. It's in biology, exercise science, and psychology.
Interesting.
Triple major.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Mississippi State is a great experience.
It's like, great. I met my husband there.
Well, that does it right there.
There. I wasn't looking for an MRS degree. Definitely not that girl. Because I just thought men were terrible.
Right.
Because of my dad. But I met Kyle early on in college and kept trying to set him up to date all my friends.
Oh, gosh.
Because I thought he was great. But I was like, I'm not dating anybody. And I didn't. And I was mean. There were some guys that would try to date me and I'm like, I'm not even going to go on a first date.
Go away. Yeah.
And then, Kyle and I became good friends. And then by the end of my first year of college, it was like, oh no, this guy's special. Mm-hmm. That's why you want to try to set him up with other girls. Mm-hmm. And then we dated and actually all the things I tried to set my boundaries around didn't work. I ended up marrying Kyle before I finished college.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you meet in a Christian thing?
We meet walking to the Baptist Student Union.
Yeah, there you go.
For lunch. Free lunch on Wednesdays.
Staying with it. Baptist Student Union. Yeah. Okay. And then he starts to pursue medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're parallel.
He wasn't pursuing medicine in college until the very, very end.
Yeah.
He had this encounter with the Lord at a youth thing. And he was weeping. And I was like, I've never seen him cry before. What is happening to you? And he's like, I don't know if God can speak, but I audibly heard him say that he's made me to be a doctor.
Wow.
I'm not smart enough to be a doctor, but I know it's him. And then Monday morning, he went and changed his major.
Wow.
And he's a doctor now.
He is. And he's good at it. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Okay. So then you guys are married.
Yep.
You graduate.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to go do more training, of course. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking I'm doing more training? Are you thinking?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I got accepted to a Jesuit college in Kansas City, Missouri called Rockhurst University.
Oh.
So he was going to med school at a DO school, Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences.
Yeah.
And then I was going to Rockhurst University to get my doctorate in physical therapy.
So you're 22-ish?
I think I'm actually 21.
21. Mm-hmm. It's worth noting, given the reason most people are listening to this,
yes,
that you've not said anything about leading worship.
Nope.
Singing at things.
Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
Okay. So now you're in Kansas City because I kind of know where the turn is. That's why I'm like, well, hold on.
How do we get there?
Right. And it is worth noting that though, because there's a lot of things people do that feels like a hobby or feels like a thing they kind of like that it doesn't occur to them might be calling or gifting or it's just natural to them. So now you're in Kansas City, you got to go to church because that's what you guys do. I'm sure you go to a couple of Baptist churches.
We don't because the first, I would say 6 weeks of our marriage, I was having an existential crisis around, don't take me to a Baptist church. I've read the scripture. Wow. It's active and exciting. And these churches are not active and exciting. And I just, how do we not see the life of Jesus and want to behave like he does?
Yeah.
That was the thought. And my husband was like, oh no, are you still a believer?
Yeah.
It was like early deconstruction, right? Yeah. But I wasn't really like, I wasn't giving up on God. I was frustrated at the expression of the church.
But given your framework, that was kind of a dangerous,
mooring thought. Like, I was in trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was working at a physical therapy clinic just as a tech because that's all, I didn't have a license to do anything else.
Right.
And one of my coworkers heard me sharing my faith with a girl. And she warned me. She's like, you're going to get fired. Our boss is an atheist. Please stop sharing your faith. And I was like, she goes, or do it quietly. And she said, do you go to church somewhere? And I said, not yet. And she said, you should come to my church. And her name was Amy. And I said, what is your church? I said, does it believe in Jesus and all things? She said, it's a non-denominational church called North Kansas City Vineyard. And so thus began the journey of Vineyard for me. And I've not been in a Vineyard church pretty much since.
Everyone gets to play. Naturally supernatural. The main and the plain. If you're a Vineyard person, you've been hearing phrases like this for a long time. Some of you have said them from stage. But if someone stopped you in a parking lot and asked you what one of them actually meant, you might need a second. That's not a memory problem. That's just what happens to a movement's language over time. It becomes shorthand. It's how we talk to one another. But you need these phrases not just to be memorable, but to hold weight, to carry meaning and story for you. Heart of the Vineyard is an 8-part video resource to help you with this. It's a series of short talks and conversations with people who know and love the Vineyard and want to help you and your church get stronger. It's coming this fall to vineyardusa.org/grow. What if discipling the next generation of girls could also bring every generation of women in your church together? That's what's happening through Vessels. Vessels helps churches launch clubs for girls in 3rd through 6th grade, helping girls discover the truth about their identity through biblical teaching, crafts, jewelry, music, and plenty of fun. But here's what makes Vessels really special. Women from 18 to 80 serve side by side, building relationships across generations as they invest in the next one. And something beautiful happens. As women remind girls who God says they are, they're being reminded of those same truths themselves. Vessels is growing in churches across the country, and we'd love to bring it to yours. And if you're headed to a Vineyard regional meetup this fall, look for the Vessels booth. We'd love to meet you. Learn more at www.godsvessels.com. Do you ever feel just scattered? Whether you're an established church or just starting out, Planning Center helps you connect every ministry and sync every detail, from volunteer schedules and kids check-ins to donations and event signups. Then you can feel at ease knowing things are in their right place. Get started for free today at planningcenter.com. The We Are Vineyard podcast is a production from the team at Vineyard USA. If you've been enjoying the podcast, leave us a review on YouTube or the podcast platform of your choice. Connect with us online for additional resources. Our website is vineyardusa.org, and we're on Instagram and Facebook at Vineyard USA. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.